Thanks for listening to Filmed in Canada. It's a repetitive podcast about Canadian movies. I'm William Lee.
And I'm Chris.
We don't have a new episode for you yet. We are working on a new batch of recordings about Canadian films, and we'll get that posted starting in January. So in the meantime, here's an oldie but a goodie. Alexander and I talked about Maudie about 2 years ago, and Chris saw Maudie after we talked about it. So have another listen to this podcast, and I'm going to ask Chris a little bit about Maudie when we're finished.
No notes?
No notes.
Hey, Alexander. You want to talk about Maudie? It's a new Canadian movie.
Maudie?
Yeah. We're going to have to wing it because I wrote like a full page of notes that I didn't bring with me. Because that's the kind of show that we run here.
Right. It's a movie about a painter in, I think it was Nova Scotia.
Yeah. So Maudie Lewis. Sorry. I think her artist name is just Maud Lewis.
Yeah.
But she was...
They don't actually call her Maudie.
No, nobody calls her Maudie. Yeah. But she was, she kind of rose to fame in the 60s through 70s. I'm going off my memory.
Isn't there Nixon involved at some point?
She sold two paintings to Nixon. So right. That's the 70s, right?
That's 70s? Okay.
Yeah. So she died in 79, I think.
Okay.
These dates can be wrong. And sorry, listeners, you'll have to fact check it on your own.
Yeah, we're not a historical podcast.
No, but it's good to like have facts, right? So yeah. We'll just these are fact-ish. They're really close.
The main fact of this movie is that it stars Sally Hawkins,
yes,
who is a fantastic actor.
She's really good. Yeah, Ethan Hawke is also in it.
Mm-hmm.
He's decent in it.
Yeah.
What else?
And directed by Aisling Walsh, who I've not seen any of her other movies, but she's actually of Irish descent.
And I believe her name is pronounced Ashley.
Okay.
At least I wrote it down at some point because it's not Aisling.
Yeah.
No,
okay.
But it's one of those Irish names that they keep it a secret how they pronounce it.
So much like Brooklyn from a few years ago, this is an Irish
Canadian co-production.
And actually, Room was Irish Canadian as well.
That's right.
Because
what was the first one you said?
Brooklyn.
Oh yeah, we never talked about Brooklyn fully though. But yeah, so yeah, Canadian Irish co-production. It was written by I forget her name. But she's a writer for a lot of TV series, including Rookie Blue, okay, or is it Cold Squad? One of those cop shows. So I mentioned this because Ashley Walsh also has like some TV pedigree, and
in Canada or
no, in Ireland.
Okay,
yeah, and so I was thinking. With the amount of like TV veteranship that's involved with it, is it going to just feel like a made-for-TV movie? And I was pleasantly surprised that it was not.
Right.
I think that's been on my mind ever since we saw that. Ever since we saw that documentary, De Palma.
Yeah.
He made a comment about how he doesn't watch TV. I'm paraphrasing because TV is just a bunch of scenes of people talking.
Yeah.
Like there's just like it lacks the thing that makes it cinematic. And ever since I heard De Palma say that, I can't watch TV, like regular TV, like cop shows or whatever, mm-hmm, without thinking like it is just a series of scenes where people talk. They talk about the crime scene they discovered. They talk about who they're going to talk to next.
Yeah,
they talk about the evidence.
That's been changing a lot in...
There is exceptions, but I think like if you just...
Network television, for sure.
Flip on a channel during prime time and watch a show, a lawyer show, a cop show, a medical show. It is just people standing in a room talking to each other.
Yeah. I've been watching Master of None recently. And
that's an exception.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that show has a lot of interesting location photography, a lot of just non-plot related conversations and stuff like that. But yeah, anyway, it's an exception.
Yeah. What I'm saying is like a movie should use the visuals and the sound and everything else to tell the story.
TV should use that too.
It should, yeah. And I'm glad that Maudie uses that. So mm-hmm, while it doesn't have a lot of flourishes that you might expect from a movie from 2017, I thought it was quite refreshing to see a movie that was kind of subdued and calm, and it wasn't frenetically edited. It just felt like it was paced well for what the story was.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it wasn't just a bunch of people standing in a room talking. It was there was a lot of the story was communicated through the setting and through their physical interaction with each other.
Yeah.
There's several scenes where Sally Hawkins, I would say I'd call it full body acting, where you know she expresses so much using her entire body, not just saying, "Hey, I'm sad."
Well, and especially as her arthritis progresses through the movie and her ability to paint decreases. Yeah, some of those scenes just exhibiting that pain that her character's going through was very well executed, I think.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess we haven't really fully established that this woman, Maud, was a painter.
So she suffered from arthritis since she was in her early years.
But some sort of chronic variant such that she was not able to really carry normal jobs or I would presume she was in pain a lot of the time and not able to go to school. And so it just seemed like she had sort of a sheltered and not very well developed youth. And as a result, it almost feels like it actually created some mental instabilities in her as well, because she was abused. She wasn't treated properly because of this this physical ailment that she had.
Yeah, I think it's established pretty early. Like her family has kind of written her off. They just see her as someone they have to take care of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she, early in the movie, comes across a want ad from a gentleman that sells fish, played by Ethan Hawke. I can't remember his name.
I don't remember either. Jack?
Jefferson Williams. He sells fish. He has a small shack kind of in the middle of nowhere and needs a live-in maid to prepare his meals, clean the house, that kind of thing. She applies for the job. No one else does. She actually takes the want ad down from the store so that there is no chance of anyone else applying, and gets this job, moves in with him. She's sort of ostracized by her family as a result of this, because it's seen that she's having this kind of she's having this out of wedlock relationship, even though they're not intimate in any way, but it's presumed and it's talked about around town that they are. And so she's kind of written off by her family. But at the same time as moving into this house, she finds herself with an ability to paint that I guess she wasn't really being able to foster or develop while she was living at her home with her aunt.
Was it an aunt? Yeah, it was her aunt.
And so she starts off just kind of painting the entire house. And then she's painting these little cards, and this woman from New York that vacations up in Nova Scotia commissions some paintings from her. She continues painting, and eventually she's selling them outside of the house. It becomes this kind of road stop tourist location that lots of people are jumping in and buying these paintings. Nixon buys one at some point.
Are you going to retell the whole movie?
Well, I'm just trying to recap it. Yeah.
Okay, I'm not sure if that's necessary, but
I feel like it's important to establish that what happens, because we want to talk about it, right?
I think people can discover that themselves if they're gonna they could look up the history of the character, or
it's a quick recap, man.
I think
the main thing I want to talk about,
yes,
is the relationship with Ethan Hawke,
because that's what's important. I think that's the thrust of the movie. Yeah.
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 It pissed me off, man.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because he's an abusive piece of shit.
Okay.
And I've heard other people talk about this movie as this exploration of romance and how you know love is this challenging thing, and you know you end up discovering that you really appreciate the people in your life and blah blah blah, and I'm just like, fuck that. This woman was abused her entire life and got into a relationship with an abusive husband that more or less just accepted the fact that, or accepted not abusing her later in life only because she made lots of money from selling these paintings, not because he found any profound love for her. I don't know. I did not enjoy that relationship at all, and I did not enjoy the filmmaker's attempt to romanticize it in any way.
Interesting.
Or show that it progressed into this more nourished relationship, and that they both improved as a result of it, or whatever. Jefferson Williams is a dick.
You made up that name.
Yeah.
Okay. Is that what we're going to call him?
Yeah.
Did you know anything about the character prior to watching the movie?
Vaguely.
Did you know what time period it was taking place in?
No.
Okay. Neither did I. I bring that up only because I think the movie deliberately does not establish itself as like this is happening in the 60s or whenever. Mm-hmm. I think it very nakedly shows what kind of relationship they have to invite that sort of introspection about what their relationship is. Because if we looked at it in 21st century eyes, we do see it as abuse. We do see it as like an abusive relationship that that she needs to get out of. He has problems too. It's hinted at early on that he has some sort of like mental handicap or of some sort, but no one identifies it. And both of them are kind of like written off by their, well, I wouldn't say written off by their community, but they're treated differently by their community. Yeah. They're not expected to function fully like everyone else. And what I found interesting was how the movie just kind of lived in that space and in that time without drawing attention to the fact that this is another time period. This is a different set of values.
But I don't know that it necessarily that it is, you know, it's a different time and men were more abusive then or whatever, because there's an instance where she's, I can't recall exactly, but she's wanting to, like, she walks out while he's in the middle of brokering some fish sale.
Well, you're talking about the scene where he strikes her.
Yeah, and he hits her, and the other guy is like, holy fuck, like, what are you doing, man?
Right.
Like, so even in that time period, this was recognized as something that he shouldn't be doing.
Yes. But I think the other thing the movie acknowledges is that a lot of it is just allowed to happen because people don't make it their problem.
Right.
Like, what happens in the home, what happens in someone else's home is their private matter.
Yeah.
So I think it's a challenging relationship that they portray in this movie. And I do think it is like a shade of love that people don't readily acknowledge because it's not, it doesn't, on the surface of it, it doesn't look like the romantic love that you see or you think you should see and experience. It is the relationship of people who are codependent and they tolerate each other and they find a way to complement each other's lives. And for them, that's enough. That equals love. The kind of love that they don't get from someone else. And for them,
well, yeah,
that has to be good enough.
Well, but it's ultimately just that she wasn't able to, she wasn't accepted by anyone else in society. And
yes.
so she basically had no other alternative.
But the movie also establishes she is, like, despite her arthritis, she seems to have her full mental faculties. Like, she's able to, like, understand the world.
Yeah.
Right? She has sexual agency in the movie, too. So she's in this relationship deliberately. She's not trapped in it. She's not a victim in that she has no way out of it. She's made a decision to be in that relationship. She's pursuing, I forget what his name is. I want to say Jack. I think it's Jack. Jack Lewis.
Johnston Murphy.
Anyway, so there is a choice to be in that relationship. The same with Lewis.
But I think it's her only choice.
It's not her only choice. It is the choice that she made.
What other choices does she have?
She could find another job, but she didn't.
Mm-hmm.
She could live with her aunt, but she didn't.
I don't know.
It's something that she pursued.
Well, it's like, it could be that it was worse with her aunt.
Well, it was not fulfilling because she didn't want to be treated that way by her aunt.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, but Lewis also, Like he doesn't. It's almost the reverse of that that like the Beauty and the Beast scenario, where like a woman is worn down until she has to accept the person who is pursuing her or her captor in the case of Beauty and the Beast. It's almost the reverse of that because in this case it's sort of Maudie wearing down Louis until he accepts, oh, okay, you're part of my life. And that means I have to marry you to keep me in my life, because she says like I'll be gone if you don't marry me.
Yeah.
So
I think she does end up changing him in a way just through like the sheer force of her positivity and her ability to just keep doing what she knows best to do and you know making a living at that. But I guess I just wish that society and history and all of those other things were such that this clearly talented artist didn't have to suffer those challenges in their life.
Well, she was also, as an artist, not recognized until she was dead.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, she sold paintings at the roadside for, you know, for $4. And I don't know how much she sold it to Nixon for. But it was after her death that, you know, people were interested in her art and paid of tens and thousands for it.
Yeah. So,
I think it was just that society let them be.
Yeah, but they certainly made a living off of it.
A modest living.
Yeah,
a modest living. And in that respect, he was the household supports that let her be an artist. So I think that's significant. That
it seemed like it was pretty quick after a while that like, or at least the movie shifted focus to her making money off of these paintings and. Didn't really seem like he was putting all that much effort into.
Well, he had to care for that.
Into his fish selling anymore.
My understanding is he continued. I forget if it made an explicit point in the movie, but I think he continued working whatever his job was, and he maintained the house.
Yeah,
that's in the movie. It's that he was relegated to being the housekeeper.
Right.
Whereas she was allowed to be an artist.
Right.
So, I think it's too easy to just say that it was an unfair relationship. I think it's a complicated relationship. I think it is a view of how a marriage between regular people can play out. It's like you tolerate each other. You do things that allow each other to be a person. Mm-hmm. You don't necessarily have to display romantic love in front of the world, right? Mm-hmm. So maybe there's just, I think it's a movie that says there's a lot more to love than you and I understand.
Okay.
Do you have any other thoughts about
money?
No. I mean, I think it's worth watching. If that wasn't clear based on what I said.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Anything that stuck out as particularly Canadian for you? It is, so it's a story about a Canadian artist in Nova Scotia. It was actually filmed in Newfoundland and Labrador.
Yeah.
Good scenery, I think.
Yep.
Lots of lighthouses.
Yep.
There's that one shot where there's a car that goes past on this road by the ocean. Does that sound familiar?
Okay.
It kind of goes laterally across the screen.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's used a couple of times. It's used a couple of times throughout the movie to, I think, indicate different time, different, what am I talking about?
The passage of time.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Except it just, to me, it really sticks out as a thing that you get in an afternoon. Like you get all those shots in an afternoon. I just wish that was kind of changed up a little bit more. I guess it's a mechanical thing that they did
on the same day, you mean?
Or? Same angle.
Yeah.
Same day, same angle.
Right.
Also, the general store, that just seemed too convenient as a recurring location where people would meet in order to further the story.
Right.
That economy of location, I think, is something we see a lot in, I mean, it's not relegated to just Canadian movies, but I think it's something that Canadian filmmakers sometimes fall on. But a good thing that there's a convenience store where everything can go down.
Mm-hmm. That could have been how that town functioned at the time, though. Just being kind of like a town hall or a church or something.
It's not
like
unbelievable,
that.
But they could have also gone to the town hall or the church.
Yeah, maybe those buildings look too modern now.
All right. Okay, so that's all we have to say about Maudie.
Yeah.
Do you think that we will be the only movie podcast that talks about Mahdi?
Well, like I mentioned, I have heard it mentioned in passing on another podcast, Battleship Pretension.
Battleship Pretension. Oh, that doesn't. That sounds prejudiced. If your podcast is called Battleship Pretension,
well, it sounds pretentious. But okay. Yeah, so they talked about it in passing on there, but it wasn't a podcast dedicated to discussing Mahdi.
All right,
so we might be the only ones.
Yeah. Okay, you are welcome, Mahdi Lewis fans.
There you go. Maybe that'll be what skyrockets us into internet stardom.
Yes.
All the Mahdi Lewis fans out there that find our podcast.
Hello, Nova Scotia.
Cool.
And we're back. That was those are pretty good comments. I am glad that I didn't say anything embarrassing. Am I wrong, Chris? Did I say something embarrassing?
No, not at all.
Right. After Alexander and I recorded on Mahdi, he was the big winner at the Canadian Screen Awards for that year. So also up for Best Picture that year were Ava, The Breadwinner, It's the Heart That Dies Last, The Little Girl Who Was Too Fond of Matches, Never Steady, Never Still, and Ravenous. Three of those movies are from Quebec, so French language movies. How many of those do you remember?
Just Never Steady, Never Still, because we saw it for the VIFF 2018.
Yeah, that's the only one I remember too. Mm-hmm. So most of that list, I didn't even know that those movies existed. So
those titles aren't even familiar, actually. Yeah, so. Except for Ravenous. But I might be mixing it up with that movie that came out about 12 years ago called Ravenous.
Was that
sort of about the daughter
cowboy
party? Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. It had a great score.
That's what I remember, too.
Mm-hmm.
It picked up prizes for Best Motion Picture. Ashley Walsh picked up Best Director. Sally Hawkins was Best Actress. Ethan Hawke, Best Supporting Actor. Sherry White collected for Best Screenplay. It also won Best Costume Design and Best Editing. Do you think it was deserving of all of those, Chris?
Absolutely. You guys talked about it, and I was jealous that you saw it, and I hadn't seen it yet. So I actually bought it on iTunes, and I paid to see it as opposed to waiting for it to come out in a format that I could watch for free. And I loved it, and then I got a chance to go to Halifax in 2018 and see the actual house that Maude and Everett lived in at the Nova Scotia Art Gallery, along with an entire exhibit of Maude Lewis's work. I've been a big fan of Maude Lewis since the 90s, when the National Film Board did a documentary called Folk Art Found Me about maritime folk art, and Maude was featured. And ever since then, I've been sort of enchanted by her her paintings.
Hmm. In the aftermath of the movie, I actually ended up finding more of Maude Lewis's works because I was looking for infant-appropriate books. And there was a series of books that just used her paintings as little flip books for young ones to enjoy the colors. So my daughter enjoyed flipping through some Maude Lewis books.
There is I hate to use the word innocence, but there is something so warm and inviting and tinged with melancholy about all of Maude's work, even if it's just a cute cat. There's something playful yet somewhat sad about it, and it might be just because I know so much about Maude's life and how difficult it was. And the fact that she could remain joyful through what seemed to be, from the moment go, a terrible life with full of challenges, it's amazing that she could make this art that feels so whimsical and joyful. And when you see the scale of Mahdi and Everett's house, it seems incomprehensible that two adults could live in that house together. It had no indoor plumbing, of course, no electricity, and it is of the smallest scale. Like, the stairs are basically just, you know, the riser is like not, is half a hand to go up to this tiny little loft where they slept. It is unbelievable that two people lived, worked, and made food in a place that tiny. One thing I'd like to say about Mahdi is one of the surprises to me was that Mahdi lived a life before she moves in with Everett. But her life is such that she doesn't get to make adult choices about things. So she's living, I think, with a maiden aunt after the death of her parents. But her brother has the purse strings for the family, modest means. And I'm not saying Mahdi was a good time girl, but she liked to go out to dances and flirt with boys and smoke cigarettes and maybe have a couple beer. And she did get pregnant before she meets Everett and gave the baby up. They later told her that the baby had died in the hospital, which wasn't true. The baby was alive and adopted out somewhere in the Maritimes. But I guess I just thought Mahdi was just sort of this innocent, you know, going through the world and drawing cats and deers. But this was a woman who wanted to live a bigger life, but was prevented by her rheumatoid arthritis and just being a woman in a very poor part of the Maritimes in the 1940s. She didn't have a lot of choices. I know that Alexander was very angry with Everett and thought it was such a horrible marriage, but in a way it was a marriage that suited both of them, and it was about as compatible as it could be given the circumstances. I don't know if Everett was abusive. He loved Mahdi, but he was a cantankerous dick. But in a way, he loved and supported Mahdi as well, at least emotionally. Financially, I don't think they ever had two coins to rub together that weren't generated by Mahdi. But
well, you and I recently saw a movie that was very truthful about marriages.
Yeah.
So I think we're talking about Marriage Story. So I think the truth about marriages is that two people make something imperfect work.
Yeah, well said. Yeah.
Well, that's why I got married. I don't know what that means. Thank you for that comment, Chris. You put too much effort into it. I just wanted us to record a little intro for some recycled material. But let's just rank this movie according to our new rating scale. Mm-hmm. I cut out the part where we, where Alexander and I scored it according to our old Leaf system. And instead, how about we compare it against a movie such as My Left Foot?
I'm into it.
All right. So My Left Foot was also about an artist with a physical challenge and a rather cantankerous character played by Jeremy Irons.
Daniel Day-Lewis. Daniel Day-Lewis. Playing the Irish writer, Christy Brown.
Yeah. But when that came out, that was also a very well-regarded movie. Mahdi against My Left Foot. Mahdi, for me, ranks My Left Foot -2.
Okay. I'll say My Left Foot -1. Mm. I would say both those actors must have done a lot of massage therapy after these roles because they are so contorted for what must have been a 2-month shoot, and they do such an incredible job demonstrating the disabilities that both of these real life people had. But it must have been very difficult for the actors to replicate those disabilities so perfectly for weeks at a time.
Yes, but he got an Oscar and she got a Canadian Screen Award.
Yeah, so it all worked out.
All right. Well, have a good Christmas if I get this posted in time. Chris?
Yeah, and everyone should watch Black Christmas again, the original.
There's another remake coming out. Did you hear?
I did not hear that.
Mm. Brace yourself.
If you're going to watch the remake, then go back and watch the Bob Clark original version first.
Yeah. Do it.
Happy holidays.
See you next year.